This is the 2nd of April, 1955. I want to give a talk here to the HPC courses with regard to some of the material which was started last week. Some of the material we started last week. Told you last week we'd turned a page. Well, believe me, we've turned a page. And honest, I hate to tell you that your page is inclusive of and embracive of all the materials which you read in Dianetics, Modern Science of Mental Health. Now, let me repeat that. There may be some of you who are not familiar with this particular volume. It made an epoch, but it didn't maybe make your bookshelf. Now, Dianetics, Modern Science, Mental Health talks an awful lot about facsimiles. Tells you an awful lot about things we call engrams and locks and memory pictures and so forth, and blames on them and their word content anything and everything that was wrong with the body. Truth of the matter is the body's composed of these things. That's very interesting. It's very interesting. It centralized and said, here's the villain. And it's true. That is the villain. All you're doing today is picking people off the time track, bringing them into present time, and making them capable of handling anything that turns up, including these pictures. All right, Dianetics, Modern Science, Mental Health deals with human illness, also the illness of cats and dogs. If you don't think a cat gets an engram or a dog gets an engram, watch them get hurt sometime, and then watch them avoid the spot and so forth. And if you like, run it out of them. You actually can run it out of them. Now, the thing called life, when we think of it as a form in action in this universe, handles its memories, handles its form and structure to a very marked degree with these pictures. Now, it doesn't handle them 100%. It doesn't handle everything 100% with pictures. The mess universe out here, contrary to a possible concept you may have had, to the contrary, the mess universe out here is not composed totally of condensed pictures. It is not. Because you can mock up some energy, and that's that. You understand that? But when we combine this mocking up something with experience, and when we mock up things compulsively or obsessively or viciously or maliciously or memorishly and say, that must happen, that mustn't happen, or, gee, that's pretty, I gotta keep that, I can't pack that sunset around in my pocket, so here it is in my engram bank. When you do that, you are actually combining masses, spaces, and experience. And when these three things go together, you in trouble. Any time they go together, you're in trouble. It's like creating a crutch. Instead of you remembering that stoves are hot, you take a picture of a stove that's a hot picture that has some pain in it. So the next time you see a stove, this picture will appear and say, nyah. What's the matter with you? Won't the stove say, nyah? All right, let's take a look at this, and we find that we have the basic structures of the mind as it has been studied, cussed, discussed, and upset about, lo, these many millennia. That's all there is to it. Anytime you get in trouble, physically or mentally, you've combined a picture of space, a mock-up of energy. You know, the stove didn't mock that up. You did. You took a picture of the stove. And a mock-up in energy with experience. And when these three things are combined, and this is used mentally, we got grief. And that's all there is to mental difficulty. See, three things combined. Space, energy, and experience. In a mock-up form. Now, do you know that you, as a Thetan, couldn't even vaguely get into trouble in this universe? Do you know that it'd be impossible for you to get into trouble in this universe? Until you start taking a picture of it. And then comparing this picture to the real universe so that you won't have to go to all the horrible labor of remembering that stoves are hot. Stoves automatically are told to you to be hot now. You see this? All right, now how do people start making these pictures? A Thetan puts out a lot of flitter, he puts out a lot of energy. And he gets over here and he sees wall. So he says, wall, that's an object. That object is not going to duplicate me worth a nickel because I do not have any space or mass. And that wall is in space and has mass. So to hell with that wall. I don't like it. I'll resist it. And he resists it with some energy. And he gets a picture of a wall. And he says, what do you know? Picture of a wall. At first, it interests him. So he goes around and takes a lot of pictures of all kinds of walls. And he files them away. And someday, or another, decides he has a use for them. The pictures of the walls, which he has filed away and combined, because he was short on energy, of course, he couldn't mock up all he needs. He combines all these pictures of walls and decides that he had better protect these pictures of these walls. Why? Well, because they're such nice pictures. Get the idea? They're real nice pictures. So the thing to do with these real nice pictures, protect them. And what do you know? A wall or something might run into them. And maybe a wall does. Maybe they get torn up in some fashion. So he takes a picture of their being torn up. You get the idea. He's protecting something. He's protecting an energy mass of some kind. And as soon as he starts to protect that energy mass, he then can say, I am that energy mass. And having become that energy mass, he can then say, I must protect myself. Get the idea? Well, now this is the mind. This is the mind in operation. This is all there is to it. It is idiotically simple, which is why we have lots of idiots. All right. Individual says, look, this energy mass now can be harmed. I am protecting it. And various things can harm it. So I'm going to resist everything that can harm it. So he resists and takes a picture of everything which could harm this energy mass. Well, he's got a bigger energy mass now, hasn't he? All right, so that makes it, it's necessary now to protect himself further, to protect his mind further. So there are a lot of new enemies. He was so small, this mass was so small and so insignificant before that not very much could get at it. But now he has a bigger mass, doesn't he? Taking a bunch of pictures of everything that can attack this mass, and having taken those pictures, he has a bigger mass, and of course this can be attacked by a lot more things, so he starts to resist a lot more things, gets a lot more pictures, adds them to the mass, and then of course this mass being bigger is more easily discernible and therefore can be attacked by a lot of new things, so he takes pictures of all these new things and he adds them to the mass, and we're going up by geometric progression. And it's a very, very neat stunt. After a while, he says, what am I doing with all this stuff? Well, it must be me. Must be good reason to have it here. So I guess I'll have it. Let's see. Do you know it hasn't got any purpose? All right, we'll dream one up. And he puts a purpose on having all this mass. And then he forgets that he dreamed up the first purpose, and forgets that he dreams up his purposes and goals, and forgets that the purposes and goals which he dreams up were dreamed up by him, and starts to expect these purposes and goals to appear from somewhere, magically, maybe out of the pictures, maybe out of the environment. But he keeps expecting somebody to present him with purposes and goals. And these purposes and goals are quite interesting, because they generally have his best welfare, not at heart. All right, so let's take a look at all of the complications, and we recognize that two things have occurred here. One, we have a lot of masses which are being protected from a lot of masses which eventually add themselves to the masses, which get protected in their turn from a lot of other things. See how this would go. And the second thing we have is why. You know, these boys that walk around saying, why, you know, what I'm really interested in is discovering whether or not God really made me. I'm really interested in this. The primal cause, that we could only discover why. We could only discover why we're all here. There must be some purpose in life. Well, if there must be some purpose in life, you could use this as a double entendre, and you would find that your purpose in life could be in two categories. The one you put in it, and the one the other fellow puts in it. You let the other fellow put it in constantly and continually, and you're in trouble. All right, first and foremost, then, we get into trouble by combining the picture of the space energy and the experience, you see, and keeping that. You see? See, because all sorts of things then concatenate from that point. And the second major point where we get in trouble is just this. We forget that we have dreamed up a purpose to have all this. We forget that it is our goal added to this mass. And we begin to believe that a goal has been added to it from somewhere or something. You got that? Now, a goal has been added into this mass from elsewhere. We say, well, it's the best thing to have goals from outside source. We forget that we add the goals. In other words, we set aside our ability to add purpose and meaning and beingness to life. And we start looking elsewhere. Start looking to something else to give us purpose and meaning. Goals, in other words. Got the idea? Because you know what's going to happen? You know what's going to happen? Sooner or later, somebody out there is going to stop giving you goals. And you're going to look to this pile of stuff, which is now a solid mass. All these mock-ups to protect from mock-ups. And we're going to look at this and we're going to say, there must be a goal in there someplace. Oh yes, there sure is. There's the goal of protecting the existing mass from threatening masses. And there's hot stoves and bucking broncos and nagging wives and 1-5 husbands. So all kinds of things in this bundle. And a fellow can start looking in there and he's got an unlimited number of goals. Unlimited, practically. Two mistakes. Two basic errors. To combine a mock-up of space, energy, and experience. Keep combining this. This comes, you know, from the fact that a mass won't duplicate a thetan. You know, a thetan has no mass. The mass has mass. So the thetan's liable to turn around and duplicate the mass. And he starts getting mass, you see, in order to communicate. All right. That's that phase that we keep adding on by protection. We keep resisting things which might attack this mass until at last we have accumulated such vast quantities of pictures that no art gallery in the world would let us in. We'd bankrupt them, making the value of art go to zero. Get this tremendous quantity of pictures, and then we forget that we ourselves add our goals and reasons for being to life. And we start to look for them from another source. Now, we can have all sorts of mechanical reasons why this takes place. But the thetan essentially is a postulate mechanism, a postulate manufacturing mechanism. See, he's a postulatory. And he manufactures all these beautiful, beautiful mechanisms out of postulates. Well, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with this. They get set by agreement, and we can track that back. But the best thing he does is postulate. And the next best thing he does is unpostulate. Got that? That's one of his capabilities. A lot of people forget this. He can unpostulate as fast as he can postulate. And the next thing he does below that is know what he has postulated and what he has taken pictures of and so forth and what this mass is all about. And the next thing below that is to communicate. And the communication of which the thetan is capable will undo any of the difficulties he has gotten into. So actually, he can stay in this realm of postulate and unpostulate, know and communicate. And if he just stayed in that realm, it wouldn't matter how many pictures he accumulated. It wouldn't matter how many masses he decided to elect or how many theta traps he got himself caught in. It just wouldn't matter. If he stayed in this realm of postulate, unpostulate, no, also unknow, of course, communicate and uncommunicate. If he just stayed there, well, he'd be all set. He doesn't. He goes into look and into emote and into effort. Honest, a thetan exerting effort is a subject for one of the better cartoonists, Virgil Punch. This is incredible. Why should he exert effort? All he has to say is be or unbe, and it will. So we get the interplay of goals entering here right at the point of communicate and uncommunicate. We say, what is he communicating? All right, he starts to communicate on the subject of goals and purposes and to accept from others and from his surroundings and from, this is incredible, from mass and energy and spaces, his goals in existence. And as soon as he does this, why, he starts making a bargain. In order to get life to persist and universes to hang together and drama to take place, Thetan likes drama. He likes lots of things, but drama, that's pretty good. Of course, in view of the fact he can't be hurt, he'll accept anything for drama. Matter of fact, there is no drama going on Earth unless it's amongst the insects who are eating insects, but it's hardly worthy of the name. Even sharks are rather dull. They just go chomp and bite and so on. There's very little real drama. The basic drama is I'll make a mock-up and you try to get it. All right. So we look over this picture. We look over this picture and we find out that in order to keep a universe going, a thetan makes a bargain. He said, I won't make any more postulates. That's his first bargain. You don't make any more postulates, and I won't make any more postulates. In other words, I won't make any unpostulates, and you won't make any unpostulates either. And boy, are we going to get a persistency of these forms. Because if we could keep on postulating at will, these forms would disappear, and change so that we could hardly remain in communication with each other. So that's his next step. You know, goals. He starts getting goals. He starts giving out and taking in goals, reasons, purposes, and meanings. And then next thing over here is this thing, this postulate term about postulates. And he says, well, he says, we won't make any postulates anymore. That's the best way. And then will we get a nice persistence, you see? And what we've got, we won't add to all the time. In other words, what we do have that is valuable because it's not suddenly going to have a duplicate appear alongside of it. You know, and I own this diamond ring, and so I own it, and you're not going to say no diamond ring, and it disappears. So on, we're going to go along on an easy course of existence, and I'm not going to postulate anymore, and you're not going to postulate anymore, and we're all going to be happy. All right, next step. We get out of phase on knowingness. Why? Because we can invent anything we want to know. See, we can invent knowingness. So the best thing to do is to stop inventing this knowingness and really know. That goes right along with goals, doesn't it? Let's stop inventing all this stuff and let's really know it, you know? Right there. Well, in view of the fact that you could know things and not know things, then we have to add bad and good to it. So we say there are a lot of things you could know that would be bad to know, so now we have to unknow. And you get amongst you a sort of a bargain going, you see, and that is that we can unknow and know in a certain framework with a certain codification, but that we just can't know and unknow at will, and that we mustn't know and unknow anything but fact. See, we must know and unknow only fact. What is fact? What could fact possibly be? Since it's an invented datum, which has been agreed upon. If we stop inventing facts, we will run fresh out of knowingness. Do you see this? Promptly and immediately, we'll run right straight off the rockers. We won't have any more knowingness. If the boys in the exact sciences were let to have their way, they would as is the exact sciences. Because if everybody knew the exact sciences, and if they were exact sciences, of course we would as is this information. Wouldn't we? Because we all have agreed. The thing to do is to teach everybody physics, and you'd have the earth disappearing. If physics were true. But physics happened to be an invented knowingness which has no great relationship to the existing masses and energies. And is in itself such a false knowingness, which is to say, here is the physical universe, and a whole cloth, we invent a whole bunch of formulas that don't fit it. And we say these formulas are it. Are we going to get persistence? You said it. And so we take a physicist and we start to run HC on Mr. Physicist. And he says, you see that wall over there? Take large masses, you know. You see that wall over there? You say it's an auditor. And he says, there. What do you mean by there? And you say, direction, you know, direction toward the wall. And he say, what are you waving your hand for? You thought I was going to say he was going to go over and touch the wall, didn't you? No. And a nuclear physicist would be entirely out of communication. Why? Because he knows that the greatest truth in the world is contained in his textbooks. Listen, if truth were contained in his textbooks, everything he touched would go, whew, and it wouldn't be there anymore. As is, see? So the only way you get persistence is by taking a picture of a wall and saying it is a picture of a tree. And then you get persistence. You go up and take a picture of the wall, and then you take the picture of the wall, another way of doing it, and you say, look what the wall did to me. You see? And you get persistence because it's got a backwards postulate in it. You have to go out and let General Motors build your car, and you own it and say, it's my car, for you to go on having the car. You realize that's why your car persists, if it does? You're saying, this is my car, inferring at the same time that you say, it's my car. Of course, that you built it. But this is obscured. Actually, somebody else built it. But it's my car. So things acquired from other people, which are supposed to be yours, of course, then have a tendency to persist, don't they? Well, this is very true, but all this picture can become very fouled up. You walk up to a Thetan, and you take a picture of his engram bank. Now, just look that over for a moment. Then a little later on, you take a look at these pictures and say, that's my engram bank. Ow. How are we going to track back across this if we're going to as-is all these pictures? So after an individual says no and unknown, after an individual has agreed that we'll have certain data to know, you know, we'll invent a flock of lies and call them economics or physics or chemistry or something, and we will all agree upon these and know these as the subject matter. See, they weren't lies, they wouldn't persist. We agree upon these, we call these exact sciences, and that's another lie. And then the best thing to do with these things is know them. So we get this tremendous number of subjects, such as women. The thing a young man should do is know women. Well, some old guy will invent a lot of lies, and a lot of women will invent a lot of lies, and he puts all this together, and he knows women. And every woman he's got in his engram bank persists and persists and persists. Okay? So, Mama thinks the young daughter ought to really be given a helping hand, you know, in life, and she says, daughter, you ought to know men. First place, men are all alike. And here we go. Here we go. We're off to the races, and we're going to get a persistent piece of knowingness. Now, in view of the fact that this persistent knowingness, of course, is not particularly useful, she gets to be 59 or something like that, and she looks back, and she suddenly realizes, and she says, you know, although all men are alike, there was that Reginald. You know, that Reginald, he just wasn't like other men. Something wrong here someplace. I wish I'd been nicer to Reginald. So forth. Here's this data starting to crumple up someplace along the track. That was a lie in the first place. When we look this over, she decides she'd better unknow it because it makes her so unhappy to remember all about these men. So she just better forget the whole works. The idea? She unknows it. Or she unknows Reginald. Or she just knows Reginald and unknows the rest of it. Or this person studies physics and then unknows physics as soon as he gets his diploma. Or he studies chemistry and he unknows chemistry. Or in the next lifetime he unknows the English language. You get the idea? See, so we have knowingness and unknowingness. Of what? Of data. Now, Caden already has potentiality of knowing or unknowing anything. He has potentiality of doing this. And instead of using this on everything, he simply starts knowing and unknowing fixed data, which has been agreed upon. And here he goes. He's off to the races. Now, what's the next step? What is the next crash in which he will be involved? Communicate and uncommunicate. He agrees not to talk. He agrees that communication is bad in some instances. And that wraps him up. That puts him in a package and lays him on the plush and buries him in the local churchyard. That finishes him. Of all of these things, none of them summate into dangerousness until this postulate is made. Communication is bad. Until we agree that communication is bad. Until we agree that people can talk too much. When we say people can talk too much. When we believe that we are annoyed by people communicating. When we start to believe that there's too much content in books. We just might as well go out and pick up our chin carefully over the wash basin, sharpen up a nice sharp razor and cut our throats. Because if you can't postulate or unpostulate at will, and if you can't acquire or discard knowledge at will and in the absence of any other agreement, you still have one as-ising mechanism left, which would blow the whole universe or any problem or any engram bank up. You have communication. And that's the last ditch. From there on, it's terra horror. From communication as an as-ising mechanism, we go into looking, emoting, effort, figure, symbols, eat, sex, mystery. And these things can only have a punch if we have taken that top strata of postulate, unpostulate, no, unknown, and then said no communication. And after that, the look to sex to mystery scale can be deadly. It can be inescapable. Only if we make those top things stick with somebody are we then able to trap him. We could not possibly get anything in a trap unless we made those first things stick. We make him agree not to postulate and not to unpostulate. We're just all friends now, and we're not going to make any more postulates. We're going to stick to the truth. You see? Got the idea? And now, because we're all friends, we have to stay in agreement with one another, and there's certain data that we should know, and we're not supposed to know any other data. No, unknown. We're not supposed to forget, either. This data which we have, we're not supposed to unknow that. Except by a certain mechanism or another, which we will call good memory or bad memory, you see? And then we're going to agree amongst ourselves that we shouldn't talk too much. And we shouldn't listen too much. And the communication can be bad. And if we agreed amongst ourselves that these things take place, then we get fixed lookingness, dispersed lookingness, fixed emotingness, dispersed emotingness, fixed effortingness. And if you don't think a line on a body is a fixed effortingness, you'll pick one up sometime. A dispersed effortingness, a fixed or dispersed figure-figurishness, fixed or dispersed symbols, fixed or dispersed eating, fixed or dispersed sex, and fixed or dispersed mysteries. You ever consider that you could be fixed on a mystery? All a mystery is a cut communication line. Somebody says, "We're going to tell you the facts now, boys." The Rosicrucians, somebody says, "We're going to tell you the facts now, boys. Just send in your dollar, your quarter, or whatever it is, and we'll send you all the hot dope." And then they send you a cut communication line. They got you fixed on a mystery, but good. So how do we make look to mystery effective? By knocking out postulate, knowingness, and communication. All right, let's take the last ditch, which may be the toppest rung that your preclear could possibly encounter. And let's take that toppest rung that your preclear could encounter. And let's discover that anything and everything as is under the onslaught of two-way communication. That is the lowest as-ising mechanism which is possible, and is probably the highest as-ising mechanism which your preclear can contact. And between these two things, we have a crossing of the road, which means clear. All right. Communication is bad. Many ways we could go about this, dozens of ways. We'll talk about that mechanically in a moment. But the point is that under the onslaught of two-way communication, any mass as is. One of these days, we're going to make an experiment. We're going to put a Scientologist on one side of the wall, a Scientologist on the other side of the wall, and just have them run one to the other mechanical two-way communication for a couple hundred hours. Then measure the thickness and density of the wall, if it's still there. All right. What's the road out? I said that we had turned the page. Well, the oddity is we sure have. Anything that has ever come up or been researched or found in Dianetics or Scientology can be subjected to the phenomena, the as-ising phenomena of communication with its consequent collapse. Any facsimile, any package of facsimiles, any valence, any universe, any trap, any interiorization, any phrase, any obsession, or any knowledge, true or false, will go by the boards under the onslaught of two-way communication. It's good news, isn't it? Now, we already know many ways to as-is and knock out of existence, knock straight out of existence, mass, space. All you have to do is make a perfect duplicate of it and it disappears. And the only thing happens to you is you go crazy. Why? Well, the individual, as he is making a perfect duplicate of every mass he sees, is actually cutting his havingness to ribbons. And the odd part of it is communication doesn't. Communication reduces havingness without cutting the individual to ribbons for reason of havingness. You got the idea? In other words, there is no repercussion when you as is by communication. Why? Because essentially, that's why he's got the mass. Something to talk with or about. And so if you give him the candy, when you take the mass away from him, he doesn't starve to death. What's the candy? Something to talk with or about. If you make a perfect duplicate of it, he didn't get his candy, did he? You got that? He just didn't get his candy. You just came along, you brute, and this poor unsuspecting fellow who has agreed not to make postulates, not to invent knowingness and uninvent it and so forth, this poor fellow, and he's agreed not to communicate and all that sort of thing. And you say, now you see that facsimile over there. Now, make an exact duplicate using its mass, its energy, and its space as the duplicate in the place where it was made at the time it was made. Use it as its own duplicate in the place and time it was made. And the thing goes, it's gone. There's no trick. As a matter of fact, you can knock out engrams, pow, 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 this way. And your preclear starts going, duh, dung, duh, what, whoa, what town, what universe? Why? He's been packing this birth, this facsimile around all these years, hoping for a little conversation on the subject. Something to talk about. Got it? All right. You come along and you say, all right, now, what could you say to birth? To birth? Well, wait a minute, I was expecting to talk to somebody else about it, but that's all right. Yeah, I could say something to birth. What the hell are you doing standing in front of my face? All right, now have it say okay. Okay, it says. We go on this way for a while and get the comm lag flat on what he could say to birth, and then we say, now, what could birth say to you? Oh, it could say, here's a couple of nice little eye drops for you, baby. And all right, you say okay to that. And he goes, okay. There's something else that birth could say to you. And here we go. In a very short time, birth will collapse. not 9 hours of erasure. Erasure was a sort of a one-way communication, you know. And you were trying to change mass with mass under old erasure techniques. It was still successful, but not anywhere near as successful. I mean, we're talking about the difference between the shadow in the dark basement as a technique, erasure, compared to somebody standing in the bright sun. I mean, here's the difference. Erasure would work, but it would have worked much better if the fellow had just kept on mocking up talk there in birth. It would have worked better, but it would work better than that if the fellow had just hello'd and okayed birth, and it would work better than that if you ran the process which I just gave you. Give me some things you could say to birth. Have it say okay. Give me some things birth could say to you, and you say okay to it. And we just go back and forth on this type, either running one side for a long time and flattening it, then the other side for a long time and flattening, or alternately. It doesn't matter too much, as long as we remember that there is a formula which was established and agreed upon very early on the track, which was communication and which predates all other masses. In view of the fact this formula predates all other masses, two-way communication, then we can do some of the most amazing things with it. So we can as-is any such facsimile. All right, what does this do in the field of parascientology? Well, I regret very much to inform you. I regret to inform you that if you have an old E-meter, in spite of what we've been writing and what I've been writing and so forth, if you've got an old E-meter, you better ungum its needle. Hey, you better pick up a copy of What to Audit and look it over. This is terrible, isn't it? And you better locate with that E-meter in terms of time exactly where the preclear's body that you're having trouble with is stuck on the time track. In terms of time. In other words, is it stuck a year ago, 10 years ago, tens of years, thousands of years, millions of years, billions of years, trillions of years, oh, trillions, all right. And all of a sudden, why, we got a kind of nail. What does it kind of seem like? He says, I don't know. He says, but there's an enormous dragon sitting in front of me licking his chops. And I think he has just eaten me. Well, you say, well, give me some things you can say to that picture. Have it say okay. Okay. And flatten that side of it, and then some things the picture could say to you. Each time you say okay, and all of a sudden, it's gone. And the first thing you know, why, he hasn't got a withered arm or something. The idea? And he can exteriorize. That's interesting, isn't it? There's a change of space list in the creation of human ability. It gives you the principal list on the track. But we dust off the old E-meter, and we take a look at it, and we read it down the line in terms of time. And we find out what incidents Preclear seems to be talking about now, and we get some, what could you say to that incident, and what could it say to you, and so forth. We'll blow it. And we will blow it to glory, and he will come on up the track. Now, the Preclear can be fished out by a simple remedy of happiness. We know that. We know that. All we have to do is have him mock up masses and have him shove them into his body. And this works perfectly all right, except the Preclear who can't mock up a mass. Except for those Preclears who don't come out after they do it. Except for those Preclears who don't stabilize after they're out and just go back in. What's doing this? Why is this guy caught in a trap of energy? What's he doing with all this stuff? Anyhow, let's take a look at this. In the first place, it's not part of his experience. It's the genetic entity line. And the genetic entity line and the anchor point system there is all fouled up with a great many masses which are discharging against a great many masses. And they create cross currents. And every time the thetan moves, tries to exteriorize, he's zapped with another one of these cross currents. He's in the handiest little trap you ever saw. Well, there's some kingpin on this trap. And it can be taken apart, and it can be as is by modern processes. So you can blow somebody out of his head. But if you got him out of his head, he's certainly not going to blow back in. If you got him out that way. Thetan normally is just discouraged. He can't handle the body because it's, it's just kicks back at him all the time and so forth. And he just kind of goes into apathy and he gives up. His best place for it's bed. Had one yesterday. Best place for a body was in bed. And what do you want to do? Was sleep. What are some of your goals in life? Sleep. We don't, when we have a little difficulty on exteriorization, we actually should take the body apart. It'll straighten out. Can't do it any damage anyhow. Because basically, the body is not composed of facsimiles. It's basically mocked up on a plan. You get the idea? It's mocked up on a plan, and the plan is kept going by certain energies. It's an electronic motor, you see. And being mocked up on this plan, it can do all sorts of things with facsimiles and add masses and not masses, but bodies that are in excellent condition don't have any facsimile masses around them or in them at all. Nice, interesting discovery. If you have somewhere down the track ever glimpsed some beautiful, beautiful girl or some gorgeous young crusader in his armor or something of the sort, and you've said, gee, you know, boy, that guy, there's no facsimiles in restimulation. The body is on exact plan. You got it? The facsimile system is one of aging. So we have two things taking place here. We just have mocked up motors, and we have this space energy experience thing. See? Different. Different. You've got a mocked up motor that's mocked up to run, it'll go on running. And we have adding to that all the time these space energy experience things, facsimiles. Good old book one. All right. What does this do, essentially, to the kind of auditing you're doing? How does it disarrange the six basic processes? Well, it doesn't disarrange the six basic processes at all. And the six basic processes, right on the tone scale positions where they are altered just to this degree. Where you get, forget, and remember, we throw in communication. In other words, something you wouldn't mind forgetting, something you wouldn't mind remembering. Now, this is communication, too. It's communication with the past. It's very effective. Matter of fact, there is no substitute that I know of for give me something. Well, I do know a substitute for it, but give me something real. You know, tell me something real. Something that's real to you. Some real memory. Remember something that's really real to you. Anything like that. Actually, there is a communication formula that goes out that. But in this bracket that we have called straight wire, I am sure now that we can graduate out of old psychotherapies, which just graduate straight out of them, which depended utterly upon the recall mechanism as such to remedy the whole condition of the body. You see, it's one thing to depend upon the recall mechanism, quite another thing to depend upon some machine just to set the whole body to rights. I think you'll agree, but elementary straight wire is a very good process. There's no doubt about this at all. But if we just run in at elementary straight wire, the communication process which I just talked to you about, we would straighten things out with that, and we could go on up with the rest of them, and we would arrive with an individual exteriorized. In what time? In much briefer time than we are doing right now. But unfortunately, auditor, I have been shotgunning around and testing these processes. I do a lot of work. It's an imposition. I research the stuff and dream it up and put it in a theoretical form. Then I have to test it. That's an imposition. Well, anyway, put it together. And started exteriorizing some preclears out of past facsimiles and universes with this type of process. And I found out that I was getting along faster exteriorizing them out of facsimiles rather than universes. But universes would work too. Found out that the cross currents and the upsets in the body, electronic structure, were occasioned by individual facsimiles, and that the preclear could change his mind pretty much about almost anything if he could get some of these facsimiles out of the road. And we're back to the problem of the individual facsimile. That's what has punch, that's what has power, and that's what's kicking the preclear's body into a cross-current state that he can't get out of or into. Remember, there are preclears that can't get into a body. So you see this? See how this would work. Well, the handiest method I know of going about this with a Scientologist is just to have him tell you some of the earliest points on the whole track that he remembers having been discovered to have been stuck at. Get the idea? He'll remember some of these things. I mean, he's had them. He's had them stirred up. He's gotten a horrible sensation. He's gotten a horrible sensation on reading what to audit when reading the boo. He couldn't quite account for this, but it was horrible. So, that's one way to pick it up, and the other is just by knee meter and say, let's see, now what is the earliest spot in the track where you're stuck? You just assume that he was stuck someplace, which is an unreasonable assumption on your part. The E-meter all of a sudden glongs and sticks too on so many millions of years or trillions of years back. And we get this circumstance then that he has a facsimile of some sort. Nice, big, juicy facsimile. Maybe Fac 1. Maybe he's a Johnny come lately. He's only stuck in a Fac 1. You just have him talk to the camera. Now, what could you say to the camera? He'll say, oh, you got fireworks. Now, we all liked fireworks back in the old days, didn't we? We liked the fireworks of Dianetics and the explosive character of its auditing and so forth. Well, it's back again. Except this time, the dynamite passes with speed. And this time, we can train auditors. And you won't go off and have a guy say, now, what could you say to that Fact One? Well, that's fine. Now, what could you say to your father? We flatten that comm lag. We flatten that Fact One out. Now, as far as blackness is concerned, you know that 50% of the time on this planet, things are black. Did you know that? 50% of the time. So you're running a facsimile along and it's night. Same facsimile there, except it's night. You say, well, it's all gone black. There's nothing else we can do about it. You know how silly this is? I've been undoing blackness cases one way or another, lightening them up and stretching them out. And I normally found that somebody or something or life has run a facsimile up to the point where night fell. And says, well, it's all black now, so there's nothing here. Except, of course, the enemy. Except, of course, all those tigers that chased me into this cave. Nothing here. All right, here we have then a slight change as of now in auditing, and I've been trying very hard to discover just exactly which was the proper process to throw at you. And I found the most proper process to throw at you, simply take some known incident with your pre-clear, if you don't have an E-meter, and have him say what he could say to that, and have it say okay each time he says something, you see. And then have it say, what could it say to him, and then have him say okay to that, and back and forth until we've blown it. And go on with that. You understand that he will try to drain the facsimile. He will try to drain the facsimile of all of its phrases. He will try to drain the bank. He has already agreed not to invent anything, see, when he agreed just to know data. So he'll try to drain the bank, and after a while, he'll say, well, my father could say to me, why, you dirty little snot-nosed bastard. No, wait a minute, he never said that. He'll say, oh, why not? Neil starts to invent some things for his father to say and return his pan-determinism over that sphere of his life. So, there are many other contributing factors, a lot of things which occur. But right at the band of elementary straight, wow, we run in this type of communication processing which I've described to you. Now, there's a dozen types of communication processing. That's what you wouldn't mind communicating with. And there's all kinds of things like that. Do you know that these things do not as-is unless the pre-clear can as-is? And most of the pre-clears you're going to be auditing that band can't as-is at sight. They can't look at birth and have it disappear. That's as-ising at sight. And they don't do this. So the best thing to do in all cases is simply this other type of processing. And that is a killer. That knocks out more damn facsimiles in less time, changes more scenes and views than you can shake a stick at. Now, that puts then communication just as such, conversational, you know, established two-way communication with the pre-clear. How are you? How are you doing? What kind of line? Let's see, was your mother married? other factors. And you write all these down on a long list, and you know, you get your assessment. You really should be doing that because it establishes two-way communication with the pre-clear. And then you get him all set this way. The next thing that you could tackle would be R220, problems and solutions, just as such. See, that's a good hot one. That's a good hot one. It takes care of this other thing I told you about earlier in the lecture, you know. We decided that we'll get our goals from other people. And we hit R220, problems and solutions, and we shake that to pieces, and then we move in. Because, you know, we've got him going someplace now. We've run enough problems and solutions, so he's going someplace. And we run right into communication processing. What wouldn't you mind this engram saying to you? That sort of thing. We could also do universe processing with it. What wouldn't you mind saying to your father? What wouldn't your father mind saying to you? We could just take a great big subject out of the person's life, like his grammar school. Now, what wouldn't you mind grammar school saying to you? Now, what wouldn't you mind saying to grammar school? He's obviously stuck in that period, you see, something on this order. It permits, and I am sorry to say this, a great deal of judgment to remain in the hands of the auditor. Now, it wasn't that I was ever backward about putting judgment into the hands of an auditor. But auditors were very backward in using any judgment on this sort of thing. The E-meter, to a large degree, assists this type of judgment. And this establishes a big difference between a hot and an unhot auditor. An auditor who is very, very hot can practically look at somebody and tell you where he's stuck. Now, the main thing that does that is bad is turn loose the auditor who knows exactly what is wrong with you, because that's what's wrong with him. So that's kind of a bad facet of it. But we won't worry about that too much. We will depend upon an E-meter when we can lay our hands on one. I think there's a bunch of used secondhand E-meters kicking around one part of the town or another. They were scrap heaped a long time ago, and I said that Scientologists should never use an E-meter. So while you're using the E-meter, you're a Dianeticist. Now, I wish to tell you that some of the tougher problems that I have been offered I haven't been getting into town in an awful hurry and so forth. I've been breaking the auditor's code to Flinders very regularly by processing people after 10 o'clock and after midnight and sometimes after 2, because that's when I can process them. So if it kills them, it's all in the name of science. But I've been busting up an awful lot of cases, and the championship case of all time apparently has just busted on this. There is a championship case around. He just came into town, and he's all broken to pieces on this technique. I mean, he was resistant to anything that was ever thrown at him. And there are two or three other championship cases around. There's an instructor, an HPC instructor, who could well use some of this. But we're back in the beautiful... we're back in the beautiful good old days. The good old days where everybody protested because he said, "Ron, we can't tell anybody about this stuff." The idea that somebody was a clam. Why, just the thought of it makes their jaws ache. The idea of running birth. We've gotten away from birth. In fact, we're a long way away from birth. And look at it, even happened to you that Time magazine took you apart for saying the human race was 76 trillion years old and we've been here 76 trillion years. You're just in for some more bad publicity. Well, we may be in for some bad publicity and some bad relationships with some pre-cleared, but we're in for a hell of a lot of cleared people. So let's get busy. Thank you.